want to tell you this. I wrote a letter to a skeptic the other day. And this is one of those guys who just doesn't believe anything, or not. Let's not use the term believe. He's not interested in the possibility. Okay, I'm not going to mention his name. Just he's not interested in even the possibility. This is one of those guys that says that everything can be explained. It's just simply something easy to talk about. And I said to him, I said in the letter, I said, what if you're wrong? What if you and all of the other skeptics who have told people they are nuts for all these years, that they have not seen UFOs, that they're all crazy. We're talking about the pilots who've seen them. We're talking about the former astronauts, the Russian cosmonaut who said that a spacecraft pulled up next to the mirror, which I have from a TASS article. I got it directly from TASS. And what if all these people were actually right? And you skeptics sitting in your armchair at home going, what if you're wrong? And what if you kept the country and the world from figuring this out because you ridiculed it and people listened to you? What if you're wrong? Well, now, Richard, let me ask you a question. What if they are wrong? What kind of damage have they done?
What if the wind has gone awry? Look, real science, as opposed to the textbook armchair variety, involves, as my test pilot friends say, pushing the envelope. It is presumptuous in the extreme. It is arrogant, bar none, to assume we know everything there is to be known.
And well, these guys know it all.
Well, the unfortunate problem is they don't, and neither do we. And I think the difference, the intellectual, honest difference is we admit we don't know and we want to find out, and they admit that they do know and there's nothing left to find out, and that is the real difference here.
And I just got a letter literally in the mail about 10 minutes ago as a kind of congratulations on our latest NASA presentation, because NASA has now, through some of its centers, been inviting us as representatives of those teams of scientists to come and tell them what we might have found on their photographs.
Okay. Now, but other than the big face, you also found some other geometric shapes that look like buildings, right?
Well, buildings, architecture, ruins, whatever you want to call it. Yes, there are some objects arrayed around this face in a stunning geometric arrangement, redundant geometric arrangement. And people of the ilk of Carl Sagan, who is someone who has some credentials to speak in this area, has said that in recognizing intelligence on Earth first makes its presence known through the geometric regularity of its design. What we did was to apply that criteria to these objects, and with the help of some of my colleagues, like Errol Tarr in the Defense Mapping, we have now come up with a series of stunning, redundant, geometric regularities, which in anybody's book, if they were playing fair, would at least indicate that we had stumbled over design. But the story gets more interesting at that point, because there is evidence now that many quarters are not playing fair with this data.
All right, but the point of it is there was obviously pyramids or some type of a square building, and there's something going on the surface of Mars, right?
There are marvelous geometric things.
Okay, hold it right there. Scientist and author Richard Hoagland, my guest, he's going to talk about the circles in just a moment. We'll be right back with Paul Stallings, everybody.
Today, within the Mars investigation, were things that are strictly reproducible in terms of the numbers and mathematics, all right? We know we've got an exquisite puzzle on Mars, which is mathematically soluble because we solved it. We now see the same mathematics in the demonstrable phenomena called circles here on Earth. We do not yet know whether circles are produced by unidentified flying objects. You know, there are some verbal reports, but there's no hard evidence to connect the two. My point is, it's irrelevant. We have a demonstrable, reproducible thing appearing all over the world in a physical form, and its mass is the same as an extraterrestrial set of objects on the planet Mars. You don't need UFOs to make it a very important mystery to be solved.
All right, let's...
The standard perspective of physics is that the universe, the three-dimensional universe that we inhabit, is all there is, period. If that's true, if it is a closed system and that's all they wrote, then they are right. What we're discussing cannot exist, period. However, in even the basic foundations of that physics, when you go to the textbooks and you read the fine print, you'll find that the quantum physicists and the nuclear physicists and the cosmologists writing and researching and teaching universities leave themselves an loophole. They talk about something called the energy of the vacuum. Sir Fred Hoyle, who was a very well-known British astrophysicist many years ago, with a colleague named Hermann Mondi, came up with a theory to explain the origin of the entire universe. It was called the steady state theory, as opposed to the Big Bang theory. In the Big Bang theory, you have this, nothing exists, and then suddenly there's this monstrous explosion, and everything issues from this one point, has been expanding ever since, and we see the remnants of this gigantic explosion as distant galaxies and quasars and stuff like that. In the Hoyle version, that event didn't happen. The universe has always existed, and the recession of galaxies and quasars and whatever was caused by the materialization out of nothing into three-dimensional space of so many hydrogen atoms per cubic mile per second. In other words, the creation of something out of nothing. And in terms of physics...
Wait a minute, that's like junk bonds. Keep going.
That's exactly. You know, Wall Street would have gotten along very well together. The point is that there is a little bit of intellectual dishonesty here, because it's only perpetual motion, that derogatory term, when someone like a Bruce De Palma, who is not in the court, proposes this is what is going on, but it is mainstream physics when a Sir Fred Hoyle or a Hermann Mondi or an Albert Einstein or a Lemaitre or any of the other big guys, when they propose it. But it's the same thing, folks. The fact is,
okay,
the Sedonia equations, if we're reading them correctly now, three dimensions, three space is not all there is. There is a four space and a five space and a six space, and what's really happening in both the devices, the technology, the end machine, as well as in the planets and in rotations of stars and galaxies and many other examples that we put in these papers, is that the universe allows you to bridge the gap between these different state spaces. When you open the circuit or open the door or open the gate, energy will cascade down from the higher dimensions to the lower, and so you don't have a closed system. All you have is an incomplete definition of a closed system. So there's no violation of the first or second law at all.
All right, that's something
that we don't yet know about. Scientific theory has got to give way to observational facts, experimental verification. And a lot of people are sitting in their armchairs, to use a Harderism, and they're quoting things out of textbooks, and the textbooks are wrong.
Right.
If De Palma's experiments are right, then the textbooks are wrong, and that's why we put all the experiments out in the book, and I foresee a free-for-all. Okay,
Tell me, doesn't De Palma have a working model here in the United States?
Yes, sir.
Where can that be seen? I'd like to see it.
Well, the problem he has is that he was told by the U.S. Navy that if he cranks it up, that they will confiscate it. Pure and simple.
And what if somebody else will make one? And will they take that away, too?
Right now, Stanford University is negotiating to purchase an existing machine, and that's going on. And Dr. Kinchlow at Stanford has already done testing on De Palma's machine and found that that he's quite correct from what we understand.
This machine does work. You say he does have a working model, but he's afraid to turn it on.
Well, in India, they got a bunch of them. Hang on, we'll be right back. Don't go away. We're back to WBGZ out in Illinois. Henry, you had some questions. Let me see if I can answer.
I wanted to make sure the thing worked before I ordered the book. That's the whole thing, because I would imagine that the man would have a working model here in this country.
Yes, sir, he does.
He does?
Yeah.
Well, if he's got one working, I'll order the book.
Okay, if you're not satisfied with the book, you return it. We'll give you a refund.
Wow.
Well, if it works, I'll be satisfied. Thank you.
Well, I certainly wish everybody well. The reason we're putting the book out is to get the knowledge out. Remember, the inventor claims no patent. In other words, once you have this information, whatever you do with it, it's yours.
Well, that's okay, as long as it works, and he's got one that does work, so that's all that matters. I ordered a book.
The country of India also has them. All right.
Can they be bought from India?
Not from India yet, but I'm going to tell you what I have heard and what I surmise.
Fine.
From what I understand, the third world countries are desperately rushing to get this technology packaged.
Fine.
And I would imagine that probably a year or 2 years from now, it will be a rather common device to purchase. Yeah, remember now, PBS is funded primarily now by corporate donations.
Yes.
I rest my case.
Yes, you don't need to say another word.
All right.
Well, Chuck, for your wisdom.
Thanks. Bye-bye. 1-800-877.
She said that she had contacted PBS about the airing of Richard Hoagland's series and was told that something to the effect that unless the series is mentioned on the McNeil-Lehrer report, they won't be carrying it.
Soviets, they all they have said is they've got, apparently they've got at least one is rather complete, and they've got pieces of another. And the one that they have the pieces of, they have released the photographs of all the pieces in the laboratory analysis, and we're publishing it.
And that's of a craft, is that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. That's what I wasn't sure that you were referring to.
Yes. We also are publishing a number of articles we got from TASS, where one of the cosmonauts said that an alien craft pulled up next to the MIR, the Mir spacecraft, when he was on board once. So, that's all I can tell you. I can only tell you to get the information, we publish it.
Why
would they lie? Why would the Soviet Union come out and lie? Why would they do that? What do they got to gain?
One such institution which has just been formed, it's a nationally syndicated, now televised by satellite television show. It's going to be called The Hidden Dimension, which is a metaphorical pun on several different levels. You can take it any way you want. I am the science advisor, and we're doing 5 initial shows through MCA, Music Corporation America. They're the ones bankrolling it. They will be in production probably in another 2 weeks. They will be aired the last week in December on some of the cable networks, over satellite, and on major syndicated stations around the United States. If the market surveys, audience response to those shows proceeds as we think it will, they will go into full production beginning in January of next year, and they will be 5 nights a week, 65 shows. We're going to cover a lot of cutting-edge topics, but we're going to do it in a way that you can trace the paper trail. No unnamed scientists, no distant hidden sources in some foreign country you can never get to. We will try to poke, the curtain rod under the beds and shine the flashlights in the corners of the closet for things that need to be examined and new discoveries and new potentials that need to be understood and made publicly widely available. So wish us luck.
I like it.
Something has happened between the time I left there and the time that Billy Cox from USA Today talked to Dr. Bondurant and the time that Dr. Bondurant sent me a letter, which I read excerpts of a couple weeks ago or last week, detailing the fact that they planned to move forward with this project and they were going to be getting tapes to us in a couple of days. They had a machine breakdown of what's called their 1-inch video recorder. They said they had to send to California for new parts for this machine.
Could be true.
Of course. It has now been 2 weeks, and the machine is still down, and that means their entire video operation is at a standstill. Now, this is the education office. This is the office which is tied into the public school system of the state of Ohio, which is tied into key PBS stations in Ohio and in the Midwest. This is the educational facility which makes broadcast tapes for duplication as a Midwest resource center four states that are like five or six states all around. I mean, this is not just one little center. This is a major national resource in terms of NASA-produced videos and documentary material and educational material that goes out to an awful lot of other people. That one-inch machine is crucial to continuing that function. When I talked to the technician yesterday, I said, Craig, I said, how in the world can you function without that machine? I said, what are you doing to get a replacement? Are you getting on these guys' backs? And instead of being righteously indignant that somebody screwed up somewhere along the line and 2 weeks had gone by and this crucial set of parts did not come in, he said to me, we're kind of, you know, doing other things. And frankly, I am very, very suspicious. Because when we were invited to speak at Goddard 2 years ago, when I was invited by the colloquium committee of the Goddard Space Flight Center to present our first briefing to NASA, engineers and scientists, on the Mars data, NASA headquarters suddenly got wind of it. And there were calls to the head of the colloquium committee, there were calls to my publisher, and there were calls to me attempting to get me uninvited. And it was only because certain members of the press called Goddard and said point blank, you know, if Hogan is uninvited, there are going to be a lot of questions asked about who is covering up what, that invitation proceeded. And I must say, I have one of the most uncomfortable lunches of my career with the chairman of that committee who had bowed to the pressure from headquarters and tried to uninvite me, because the man during the entire lunch would never look me in the eye. I am beginning to discern the same potential problem here. I believe Dr. Bondurant has operated totally in good faith.
All right, let's see.
His technicians are operating in total good faith, but I have the feeling that because of the programs we have done and the visibility that we have given to this project, that someone at some higher level has perhaps gotten wind of it and has decided this is not in NASA's best interest, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And that we are suffering an equipment breakdown that, in fact, is not really an equipment breakdown.
Well, whether it is or not, the point of it is it does look to give you cause for concern. Let's use that term is cause for concern, and it also is certainly disappointing. Let's leave it go at that and hope they can fix their stuff. Just a moment, if you would tell my listeners, and you are on about 96 United States of America radio stations, you're currently, for your information, and maybe after the program we can exchange some stuff by mail.
Great.
You're on, right now, Galaxy 2 satellite, you're on SATCOM 1R, you're on SpaceNet 3. Later on this evening, you will be on the million-watt beam of a shortwave station that covers the planet.
Terrific.
That'll be between 9 and 10 p.m. Eastern Time. If you want to write it down, it's 7.520 megahertz.
Okay.
7.520 megahertz. Providing the tape doesn't break, if you can find a shortwave receiver, it just screams off the dial because it's a million-watt beam.
Terrific.
So, and also you're in Los Angeles and Chicago. Sal, what do you do for a living?
I'm the managing editor of the Weekly World News.
How come nobody wants to believe the Weekly World News? I've gotten a lot of neat...
It's not true. Everybody wants to believe us. Our phones are ringing off the hook. We've talked to people all week who confirmed this story, so it's not a question of believing it. Why other people and why other press outlets don't want to pick up the story, I don't know.
All right, now let's talk for a minute and understand.
Sure.
I'm not against you.
Yeah.
I have gotten a lot of neat stories out of your paper and the tabloids, one of which years and years ago was the expose on the mercury fillings.
Yes.
And the last issue of Newsweek had essentially the same thing, only a bit more.
Yeah, usually 5 years too late.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So what you're telling us on the October 30th edition, 1990, of the Weekly World News is what? Headline, alien captured by U.S. agents. You got all kinds of photos. They're great photos. I used to be in the photo business.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, they're great photos. Whether they're you know.
We had to publish them. We had to, we don't, when we, they come into our hands, and the way they were sent to us, we had no choice. We had to publish them, and our readers demand that we publish them. We are raked over the coals any time we neglect the story, and they say to us, have you become part of the cover-up? Are you part of the problem now? What's the matter with you guys? Aren't you going to tell us about the UFOs? Especially when taxpayers find out how much money the U.S. government is spending, and that's come out in every newspaper in the country. The extraordinary amount of money that's spent on UFO research that is not shared with the public. All we're doing is providing an outlet, and people said we're going to get probably many more stories now that people see what we've done. We're going to have probably experience an avalanche of stories. So this is only the beginning.
Well, Sal, let me ask you a question, and let's just for a minute verify the fact that Howard Bloom, who is a noted journalist, just recently wrote an expose book called Out There.
That's right.
A number of other rather well-known folks have gone into the subject matter, although very scared because of the ridicule factor.
Yeah.
But the one thing I got to tell you, the photos you have, what I like so much about the photos is I used to be in the makeup and the motion picture business.
Yeah.
You can do anything with a head, but it's very, very difficult to do anything with the hands.
Yeah.
And the hands, man, are nothing like I've seen before. Hang on a moment.
Yes.
We're
going
to do a break. We'll be right back. Sal Ivone is my guest. He is the managing editor of the Weekly World News. So here we have photographs of a black-type car, a government-type car.
Yeah.
And and there's government-type agents. They appear at one point to be trying to cover up this alien with a coat.
So we were amazed to even bring him out to the open, and I don't know why they did that. Here's a photographer staking out this thing, and they are remarkable photos.
The most interesting thing is you can do anything with silly putty with a face and a head.
Oh, sure.
And you can make hands and fingers bigger, but you can't make them smaller. And this creature's got the smallest little hands and fingers and no fingernails I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, either it's a phony photograph, and it's been computer-enhanced, or it's legit. What do you say?
Well, upon receiving these things, what we do is we'll send them to somebody and ask an expert. We have photographic experts around. We all deal with photography. So what do you think? We take a look at them. We examine the story. We make as many phone calls as we can. And then we have a meeting, an editorial meeting. We say, we've got to show this to the American people. Can we do it with in good conscience? Let's do it, because there are sensational photos and a sensational story. And again, when we don't do it, we get into trouble with our readers. They demand this.
Now, Sal, as the managing editor of this newspaper, and I'm not trying to put you under the heat lamp.
Oh, no, not at all.
But I want to share something with people. Recently, I guess the Philadelphia Inquirer got hit with an $18 million judgment for running a story that somebody said was not correct. You're in a real hot seat, because if you knowingly run a hoax, then you're guilty of mail fraud.
That's right. That's right.
You're telling me that's up, that you would not run this thing if you thought it was a hoax. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. Because we what we respond to is a photo sent to us, and those photos have to be legitimate. The story has to be legitimate. And we have to go through anything we can to check it out. Once we've satisfy those requirements, and we can publish.
All right.
But we have an editorial board, and they look at everything we do. We have a legal staff. They look at everything we do. We have an executive editor. We have people checking everything out. So once we've satisfied those people, then we can go ahead and publish. And again, as I say, we've got our primary judges, our readers, and our readers demand these kinds of stories.
Well, Sal, let me ask you this question. You know, you're saying in the story that you've got at least 12 different ways of proving to you that the story is legit. Can you tell us anything since you published?
We're working on a story now, and there's really nothing I can do to receive, because we're in that process of checking it out. Again, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm going to let something go that isn't checked out. So that process is on right now, and it's a follow-up on what we've got. But as again, then I would, before it's checked out, before it's thoroughly researched, we're gonna sit on it. That's all I can say. In a couple of weeks, I think I can let you know. You may see the Weekly World News in 3 weeks and say, well, they really did have something. So there's no way I can let it go.
All right. For the people who haven't seen your newspaper, your tabloid newspaper this week, or that may not be able to get it, tell them the story.
Well, the story is that somebody who was a photographer and a CIA person who's associated with them was seen. What he saw was agents taking had custody of an agent. Of an alien. And took the photographs and sent us in the story. And it's really a photo spread. And he backs it up pretty well.
Now, supposedly, in the story, if I may read here, and you give me permission,
absolutely.
Okay. What you're saying is that apparently a craft, you say on the morning of September 29th, the story does, I got a tip that agents had captured the alien while investigating a UFO landing in Western Virginia's mountains the night before.
Right.
My source told me that the craft had come and gone by the time agents arrived, but a sweep of the area produced a single extraterrestrial who was hiding in a clump of bushes some 75 yards from the landing site. The source also told me that the alien would be taken to a safe house for questioning later that day. When the agents and the extraterrestrial arrived, I was hiding in an alley across the street with my camera and 9 rolls of film. The pictures clearly show that the alien was handcuffed, and when the agents escorted him out of the safe house 45 minutes later, one of them had his coat off, and you can see a gun on his belt.
Right.
Says George Bush knows all about this.
Yeah, that's what his claim is. Of course, there's no way to check that out. We have called the White House, they lied. And I guess that's what they're all trained to do.
All right, let's just...
Necessary calls to all the government agencies, and they always say the same thing. And, you know, we have no comment on that, and that is patently preposterous. And that's where they stand.
All right. In a recent edition of our... We put out a quarterly magazine. We don't have your kind of circulation, but it's a quarterly magazine. Consumer stuff and current events and future stuff, okay? And I've got a story I'm going to send you about the space power generator. You'll love this book we just
published. Terrific. I'd be happy to see it.
Right. Anyhow, to make a long story short, here we have a situation where not too long ago, a document was delivered to me, obviously leaked to me through an intermediate source, and it was from the CIA.
Hmm.
And it was a secret CIA evaluation of all of the articles in the Soviet press about aliens and landings and the whole bit. And it was a very serious, no-nonsense thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it was leaked to us, and I picked up the phone, and I called the CIA, and I asked to speak to the author who picked up the phone, and I... like the Foreign Broadcast Information Service document that I got about UFOs.
Yeah.
We then recently went into the TOS computer, Sal.
And fascinating, yeah.
And we asked it to look up articles about UFOs, and one of the cosmonauts said that an alien spacecraft pulled next to his ship.
That's a fascinating story. That sounds terrific.
While he was in the MERG ship.
Yeah.
I'll send you a copy of it.
Oh, that'd be great. The reason that some of the readers get upset, that we, I imagine that your listeners give you the sense as well, that this is tax money that's being used to investigate these things. I believe that the U.S. Citizen has a right to hear what's going on. If they find something, I guess they say, well, we don't want to panic anybody, but here we are with all kinds of documentation and photographs, and we're inundated with documents and photos, and let's hear somebody officially acknowledge what's going on. Just take it out of the shadows and into the light, and let's examine what we've got, all of us together, rather than it just appearing in sporadic tabloids or a magazine here and there devoted to the subject. Why not let everybody judge for themselves? Let's do it out in the open.
Well, it's interesting to note that the Financial Times of London openly reported on the Belgium situation.
Yes, that's how we did a story. We started to investigate that. Now, that's a story that got a lot of play in other newspapers.
Yeah, Sal, hang on for a minute. Let me do a break, and when we come back, maybe we could talk a little bit about where you get your stories, from, especially from other countries, and how come we never see them here.
Right.
And then when you print them, nobody believes them, although they really are legit.
Well, yeah.
Hang on. We'll be right back. Here's my guest. He's the managing editor of the Weekly World News. Sal, I go into my computer and I can call up the Financial Times of London. I can call up newspapers around the world. I'm using CompuServe and their executive news service and also their iQuest service. It ain't cheap, but boy, it's neat.
Yes, it is, yes. We have a similar situation. We also, what we do, which I'm not sure you're able to do, is we've got a staff of people who clip 1,000 newspapers from around the world. That's newspapers and magazines in about 7 different languages. And when something unusual or bizarre or fascinating happens, we've got it. It's one thing that a lot of other newspapers can't do. That's what we're strictly devoted to.
Next is a tabloid that is primarily designed for entertainment. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
In other words, a lot of people,
know what?
A lot of people, you know, will rip them up and say, oh, that's not a newspaper. And we called them up and we asked them about the story. And the editor was very, very quick to point out that they never claimed to be a newspaper. They claimed to be a weekly entertainment feature paper.
Yeah.
Now, of course, they claim that the story is accurate. Whether it is or not, who will ever know? Some people are already analyzing the photographs and claim that they're a fraud. Very well could be. Don't know. We had the editor of the newspaper on with us. He claims that as far as he knows, it's not a hoax. And he said pretty strong words that I think could really get him nailed for mail fraud if he knowingly participated in a hoax. So that's all I can
tell
you. I mean, you know, I'm not about ready to go in the tabloid business. This was last Friday. We were talking about it. And I was just about as sick last Friday as I am today, and I didn't feel like beating up on George Bush, so we kind of had fun with it.
Uh-huh.
Now you've got a guy by the name of Stanton Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
He's a well-known and respected physicist. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's very much into it. He has a report out on MJ-12, which you may find to be extremely credible.
Does he include Yellow Book and Grunge?
He does a report on MJ-12 based on papers he actually found at the archives.
Uh-huh.